Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, newly returned from Tuscany.
But not from Florence and Siena, but from smaller towns, some of them not even qualifying as towns, some out-of-the-way places, some very, very interesting people.
Mount Amiata.
How many
people have been there?
There you go. Well,
what's the other one? Limon, whatever?
I'll bet our first interview is, I think, the discovery that we made on our whole trip.
Oh, I loved, absolutely loved
a
it.
A wonderful restaurant, a new chef new to Oni's, in his own establishment with his partner in a tiny little village just off a road called the Ricorda between Siena and Betoli, itself not a very big town.
And let's pre-warn people that it's perched way up there. It's, so don't be shy about turning onto the up ramp on this medieval town.
Right. If you're going the right way, you'll find a sign and you'll do a sharp right through a tunnel and break into the town. Davide Canella is the owner, together with his partner Anna, who's from Portugal. We had a wonderful meal. We had a wonderful conversation with them. We're sure this is a place that you're going to want to seek out the next time you go to Tuscany.
Oh, it goes to the top of my list. First glance at this restaurant in this tiny, tiny medieval hill town was, wow. We're at a restaurant called Davide Canella, and we're talking to the owner, whose name is the same, Davide Canella, and also to a co-owner, Anna Ribeiro. Is that right, Anna?
Yes, Anna.
who, in fact, is from Portugal.
Yes. So
this place is, I'm directing this question to you, Davide. It's so gorgeous. What did you have in mind? I mean, given the fact that it's a, what century is the building? 12th century?
19th century.
And it's, you have the floor is raised or lowered, or I don't even know how to describe it, with glass so you can see to the old floor. And yeah, it has here 17th century.
Yeah, from the 1894. Well, that they did the last modification. But
oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, but the building itself was built, and it was an old cellar.
Yes.
Wine cellar,
yes.
Right. And you've now been open for 6 months. Davide, you are from Lucca.
Yes, I'm born in Lucca, and I live for 20 years in Marina di Carrara. And then I start to work in Europe. And after I come in here in Siena, and I start to work before in Locanda della Morosa for 2 years, and after for 5 years in Castello di Spaltena, Gaiola in Chianti. And now I opened this restaurant for 6 months.
Well, it certainly is stylish and gorgeous, and I know it's the realization of your dreams, the two of you. And so congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell our listeners what to expect by way of the decor and the design of this restaurant.
Well, we try to keep the main features, the original features from the building. But even though you expect all the original floor and the ceiling, the typical ceiling from the old restaurants here in Siena, you can find also a little bit of a stylish...
Oh, contemporary lighting.
Yes,
the lighting
exactly.
Is fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Exactly. Well, it's all is the owner for Davide, because it was him that select all everything, all the...
So he's multi-talented.
Yes.
I'm looking at your description, Davide, of your kitchen or your cuisine. And you say it's characterized by the authenticity of the products selected daily from small local producers. The footprint, I've never heard it phrased this way. It's interesting. The footprint is the traditional Tuscan food. But it's all modernized and lighter. And you're very committed to supporting local producers. In fact, the first page of your menu, you list your suppliers, the butcher, the fishmonger, the fruit and vegetable. So you are definitely an ingredient-driven chef, right?
Yes.
Right. And what about it is really particular to you?
La base della mia cucina è comunque prodotti toscani. Sono diversi perché metto un po' di creatività in quei piatti tradizionali della Toscani, ecco.
The basis of my cuisine is the Tuscan cuisine. We use the products and the typical Tuscan cuisine, and we do a remake. So, yes, with lighter cooking.
Yeah.
But even though we use the products that is from the typical Tuscan cuisine.
But it's more modern.
More modern, exactly. Modern. And lighter also.
I wanted to know who actually comes here, since it's such a small place. Do people come here just to eat your cuisine?
Yes.
So you have a reputation.
Yeah, the people, they know me because I work in Siena from 7 years, and they know me, and they come for the kitchen, for the restaurant, because it's different. It's different place, different plate also.
For reference purposes, from Siena, how long does it take to drive here? It's really quite a short distance, I think.
From Siena, it's 20 minutes. 15.
Yeah, and the only thing you have
kilometers.
To do is make sure you make the right turn into the little village. If you're making the correct turn, there is a sign that says how you get here. If you're not making the right turn, there isn't a sign. So you have to remember to make sure that it looks like you're at the end of the road, and then there's a little sign and a sharp right turn through a tunnel.
Yes.
And then you climb the road following towards the Chiesa. And you'll be a little frightened, as I was, but you'll arrive safely right in front of the restaurant, and there are parking places right there. So you have no excuse if you're traveling in the Siena vicinity, or if you're further to the south in the opposite direction. From Arezzo is not so very far away.
No.
So it's very accessible, right on a road which is a fast road called a raccordo for reasons I don't understand at all.
Looking at this menu, you have, for example, we have a lot of options. You have two different tasting menus. One is a typical tasting menu, which I imagine are your specialties, chef's choice. And then you have an unusual for this part of the country, a fish tasting menu, which I was pleased to see since I love fish. Is it difficult getting fish here?
No, we find for 3 times a week the fish.
Now, where do you get it?
From Grosseto, Livorno.
Grosseto.
Sì. Ah.
Now, you also have an a la carte menu. Could you just pick some of your most favorite dishes that you would like people to know about, to further understand your cooking style? Now, pick an appetizer. Which of these appetizers would you say was a signature?
Potrebbe essere la... Il lampredotto con le acciughe sotto pesto. It's typical from Florence. It's è praticamente è un piatto tipico del fiorentino con l'aggiunta delle acciughe sotto pesto e dei gamberi. Sono una cosa diversa da quello che si trova normalmente.
This one lampredotto is the plate that is one of the remade, because lampredotto is one of the parts of the stomach of the pig. It is very typical from Florence.
No, di manzo, di vitello.
Di vitello.
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 It's tripe.
It's tripe.
Okay.
Yeah. So what this one is the remade. So he did with the anchovies, with the pesto, and the prawn tails. So he put a little bit of land and sea all
land
together.
And sea.
Yes. And even the person from Florence that came here, because we also have some clients from Florence, they were surprised because they never thought that it would be such a good combination.
Normalmente si trovano ai chioschi, cioè chiosco praticamente dei piccoli negozietti dove si mangia il lampredotto, ma è solo bollito e condito con alcune salse verdi, quindi è una cosa molto semplice che si mangia in un panino.
This lampredotto in Florence, they usually eat as a sandwich.
Oh.
Only with the bread. They just put in the water, they boil it with water, and they put some green sauce all together. And then they eat in the streets. They have small places in the streets, and they eat with the bread.
So it's street food.
Like a snack,
yeah,
exactly.
Street food, yes.
Do you make your own pasta here? You have a number of interesting, including peachy. I've had peachy probably twice a day, every day. And this area, they eat a lot of peachy.
Yes.
Do you make your own pasta?
Yes.
It's all fresh.
Yeah, it's also fresh.
And now we move on to fish and meat. What is your favorite? Do you like pork? Do you like beef?
I like pork. It's
The saddle of pork.
Saddle of pork with aromatic herbs and wild mushrooms.
Yes.
Great. Do you forage for your wild mushrooms?
Yes.
Do yourself? Wow. And then you have the famous Florentine steak.
Florentine steak. It's around, it's 1 kilo, 300, 200.
For a minimum of two
persons.
Oh, it's a minimum of two. That usually is. That's how they
do
it.
Well, yes.
And you have side dishes, zolfini beans.
Zolfini beans. It's typical. It's beans, small, and
white.
Yellow, just a little bit yellow. It's white. It's cannellini. We call it cannellini. It's different. It's a little bit different.
And then if I turn the page on that, I see you have a very serious cheese program. Used cheese. Raw milk, goat's cheese, and you also have a serious wine program. Tell us about your wines.
I vini, tutti i vini, abbiamo una carta di vini che praticamente comprende tutta la zona del Chianti, Montalcino, Montepulciano e Val d'Orcia.
You have a lot to choose from in this area, don't you?
Per il momento sì, sono abbastanza, abbiamo abbastanza vini per.
Our wine list comprehends especially the Tuscan, the main areas from Tuscan. There is Chianti, Montalcino and Montepulciano, and also Val d'Orcia that also have great wines. For now, only the red wines are from Tuscan. The white ones are more from the north and from Sicily also.
Oh, Sicily. What do you have?
We have from Donna Fugata. Great white wines. Vigna di Gabri, Ligea also, very nice. Yeah. For now, we only focus in these areas. Red ones, definitely from Tuscany.
Oh, yes.
So we have such a great wine, so... And we also have the Super Tuscan. That
I bet.
Not only the OCG or the OC, but also Super Tuscan. They're also very, very nice and great wines.
I can't help but ask you, Anna, how did you get from Portugal to Toscana?
Well, I didn't came directly from Portugal. First, I went to London. I lived there for 14 months. Lived and work also. But before I went there, I met Davide. So we keep in touch when I was in London. And then after 14 months, I decided, well, what should I do? Do I stay here in London on my own or do I go to Italy?
No. I was in Portugal, in Algarve. I work 2 years in Algarve, and then I was in Madeira just
on holidays.
And I met Anna.
So. It's a story of every story restaurant in Toscana.
Yeah.
Well, it's just been delightful to meet you, and we can hardly wait to taste the food. Did you have something to say, Rabideau?
No.
I was just echoing that somehow it seems like men's lives change when they meet ladies that they love, and the reverse is also true.
Yes.
So this restaurant, in a way, is like a love story of your own, and we hope that everything continues for you as well as I think it has begun. And thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, and now to lunch.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
They were just a lovely couple, absolutely amazing place. And when I learned all about the curled octopus, It stays curled.
But you could talk about the menu all day. We just have to tell people they're going to have to go for themselves.
And try whatever, yes.
And in the meantime, it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And we're about to launch into another visit to a winery that's very special. The name will not be strange to you. Everybody, I think, has heard of, anybody interested in wine has heard of Frescobaldi. And what a wonderful opportunity it was to meet another charming, new, brand new friend, Tiziana Frescobaldi, and have a lovely lunch.
And have a wonderful story about the development of the Frescobaldi family in wine, 7 centuries of it, but the modernization of it that's taken place most recently that's really projecting Italian wines into the mainstream of excellent wines that you should all consider. So don't be surprised if the segment after this and the segment after that are all about wine as well. We couldn't decide which one to put first, so we sort of tossed up. So Frescobaldi, followed by two others that you'll want to listen to as well.
Tiziana Frescobaldi says her people came to Italy about 1,000 years ago. And somewhere along the way, maybe a couple of centuries later, they started to make wine. That's fascinating. More fascinating is that they're still doing it today.
That's right.
And even better.
and within the last 50 or 60 years, doing it differently. Tiziana, welcome to On the Menu Radio. We're delighted to be at one of your castles. What's it like to be a member of a family that's been doing this kind of thing for such a long time?
Well, hello everybody. It is absolutely normal and natural to me since I don't have any other experience, but I was born into this family. So I can just tell you that I was raised with producing wine all my life. So I was really, ever since I was born, I could smell, you know, the wine and the flavors of the wine, and I saw people producing wine all the time. So it was actually, everything seems very normal for me. Of course, now I understand that it's not everybody has this upbringing, but and it's always been part of my life, really, wine producing. Although I have sometimes tried to have other experience in life. I just wanted, you know, I was interested in other things as well. So I moved for some time to Rome, and I moved to London, and I've lived, you know, in other cities. But then I've been working in the wine here. I got back to Florence, and I've been working here for like 16 years now. And I came back to my roots, as we could say.
Now, you told us, though, in discussing things over lunch, you said that something very different happened with the producing wine in Italy about half a century ago.
That's
so,
right.
So wine was a commodity product in years past, and the quality wasn't necessarily very good, and then all of a sudden something changed.
Yeah. It was because I think it was like, as you said, about 50 years ago, that it was shortly after the Second World War that the whole economic system changed. We had a sharecropping system before, and this meant that the people that were running the land were taking their product, their grapes, to here, to the castle of Nipozzano, to make wine. And then when the economy changed, a lot of people were moving, and we decided to have direct control of the land. So, in fact, we planted a lot of vineyards in the 60s and with the new system. And this is what allowed us to make better wine, to have direct control on the product, on the producing wine system. And so we really were able to change the quality of the wine. And at the same time, the world here was changing. A lot of people were interested not so much in drinking wine, but in drinking good wine. So this was a challenge for us. The two things put together just made, you know, this huge big change that allowed us produce better and better wines each year. And now I think that what I was thinking before, what we were discussing before, was just this. We have been producing wine for so many generations. And wine has always been part of our history, of our family history, of the history of Tuscany and the history of Italy, presumably. But honestly, we have gone through such big change over the last 50 years that the wine that was produced before was probably something different from what we mean by saying wine nowadays.
Now, what we had at lunchtime was just absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I thought we might just take those as an example, because you also make wine outside of the region of Tuscany, but we're in Tuscany. This trip's sort of about Tuscany. So why don't you talk about the three Vino Rosso that we sampled today?
Yes, I am very happy to talk about the three wines that we had today, because I tried to make it quite interesting and special, because I chose the two wines of Castello di Nipozzano, where we are now. Castello di Nipozzano, a lot of people might not know, is just close to Florence, about 30 kilometers, 25 kilometers away from Florence, and it's in the region of Chianti Rufina. And Nipozzano, the first Nipozzano, the first wine we had was Nipozzano Riserva, and I think it's a very interesting wine. It's a wine that I think is a very classic of Tuscany. It's very soft tannins, it's very fruity, it's very round wine, and I think it's one of those wines that can match a lot of dishes, a lot going from a first course to a meat on, yeah. You know, it's a very versatile wine. It's not at all expensive.
But you know, what's interesting is it's as good on its own as it is with food, which you don't find a lot of.
Yeah, that is true. And there's another thing that I was going to mention is, of course, it's made with Sangiovese grape, being a Chianti Rufina. So I think we try and really produce a wine that has very Tuscan style, but at the same time is a very versatile wine that is can go with a lot of dishes, you know, internationally speaking. And I think it just makes a meal very pleasant and very nice.
Very fun.
Now we moved on. We went slightly out of region.
We did, yes, we did, because I thought that it would be interesting to just go out from this region close to Firenze, and let's go to close to Siena. And I just wanted you to taste some Castel Giocondo. Castel Giocondo is our property in the Montalcino area. So we tasted some Brunello di Montalcino, which
is wonderful.
the 2005 of Castel Giocondo. And I'm very fond of that wine as well. That is possibly a more structured wine. I think it has a lot of body inside it. At the same time, I think it's very soft, it's very pleasant. It's at the same time, it's a lot of fruit inside, you know, when you smell it. I think it's a very interesting wine, of course. I think it's a slightly more complex wine in a way, but at the same time, I do think that Brunello is a wine that can be drunk at any time. I don't personally think that it has to go with some special dishes. I think as I was telling before, is a very pleasant wine to go with a first course or whatever, meat or I would pair it with a lot of dishes, personally.
But then we returned home to the Castello.
We did.
For the third wine, and a wine that I think is a relatively new development, if I'm correct.
Yes, it is. Well, everything is old, if you could think of, you know, for us, but it's relatively new for Frescobaldi. And I think it's a wine that is called Mormoreto. Mormoreto is a difficult word. I cannot pronounce it sometimes, but myself, no. I'm joking.
I'm sure you can. Yes.
No. but I'm a lot of people, of course, it's not easy, but it's the name of the small part of this estate of Castello di Nipozzano. It's called Mormoreto. It's a little area just on the hill here, just nearby. And there we grow Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and a little bit of Petit Verdot in different vineyards. And so it's a blend of these three varieties. So it's not, this wine is a super Tuscan. It's not a Sangiovese, like the wines that we were commenting before, just Nipozzano, Riserva, and Castel Giocondo, Brunello di Montalcino. Those wines are Sangiovese. But this wine, Mormoreto, is not a Sangiovese, it's a super Tuscan. And it's a wine that now celebrates its 25th anniversary, 75th birthday.
Really?
So, so I think I'm very fond of this wine because I think it's the other side of how we tell the story of Nipozzano, of the contemporary history of Nipozzano. It's through Sangiovese, but at the same time, it's through this wine that tells us a different story because the variety is different, the cepage is different, but at the same time, it tells us about the same terroir of Nipozzano. So I just find it interesting because it's, for me, it's just different, of course, a different wine, but at the same time, it's coming from this area. So that's what makes it interesting. But
yeah, there are many more Frescobaldi wines, but there's one more that I want to mention because we have an interview in our Tuscany trip, our out-of-the-way Tuscany trip, which is near Sassicaia, and you have a property near there as well.
It is, yes.
Near Bulgari.
Yes, we have Ornellaia, Tenuta dell'Ornellaia, and that is also a property that we own in on the coast, and there we do also have some very, very excellent wines, one of which is Tenuta dell'Ornellaia, and the other one being Masseto, which is another very important wine in the whole of the panorama of Tuscan wines, and I would say not only Tuscan wines, but it's one of the wines that is most well reputed coming from Europe. I would think that, you know, Masseto is probably considered probably the top quality of wine in Europe or in the world. So I think it's also that estate is also a very nice estate. That we are so lucky to be able to be in some of the best areas in Tuscany.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that luck has a lot to do with it. I think, what's the expression in English? You make your own luck. I don't know how you say that in Italian, but I'm guessing the same words probably exist in Italian.
Yes.
Frescobaldi family seems to me to be doing that, and the result of that is not just limiting themselves to wine.
Yes.
But saying, we want to be in the business of food that matches with wine as well. So, Tiziana, tell us a little bit about some of the food ventures that you have going
Yes, I will. First of all, I wanted to comment your first thing that you said, luck, is as Machiavelli probably said some years ago, it's 50% luck and 50% is, plan. Of course, the being able to do things. Yes, so being a Florentine, I was going back to Machiavelli.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's to say that, of course, we are entirely agree on this, but you know, I just wanted to comment a few things that I think we do concentrate in trying to produce some good wine and trying to make the best out of our estate. So this, the way that we choose to promote our wines is sometimes, and to let people know about our wines is to have some restaurants. We have a restaurant in Florence, in downtown Florence, just close to the Piazza Signoria, which is called Dei Frescobaldi Restaurant and Wine Bar. And then we have, and this is a place where it's like a restaurant. You just call, you just can go and have a meal there. And our main goal is, of course, to promote our wine, but at the same time, we know that good wine has to go with good food. So we do have a restaurant there, and we have, sometimes we also have some visiting chefs, some visiting important chefs that come, some of the most reputed Italian chefs coming to cook for us.
It's a wonderful series, and you're going to keep us informed of your schedule so that we can post on our website.
That's wonderful.
What the chefs are coming. Yeah. Who they are and when they're going to be at
but
here, restaurant.
But here's a piece of really good news for those people who think that Florence is a tourist destination isn't necessarily something on their agenda, but London might be.
Yeah.
So quite entirely surprisingly, Tiziana, yes, you were telling us that you have a restaurant there too.
Yes, we do. We do have a restaurant, Dei Frescobaldi Restaurant and Wine Bar in Harrods. So, of course, Harrods is one of those places that if you go to London, nobody can miss. So, if you want to go and have some Frescobaldi wine with an Italian dish or an Italian meal, there's a Frescobaldi restaurant in Harrods, which is, you go to the food hall, and then from the food hall, there's a wine hall in the basement. You just go down a few stairs and you will meet the Frescobaldi restaurant there. And so we opened this up a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago. And we're very fond of the Frescobaldi restaurant in London because we were happy to be in Harrods. And I think it's a very nice, interesting destination for a lot of people. People go and we can actually meet a lot of people there, a lot of people coming from all the world. So it's very interesting.
Now, you mentioned a wine bar and the Fiumicino Airport as well. So it's almost like you can't escape the clutches of Frescobaldi.
And why would you want to? It's really good.
We certainly did not escape those clutches. We've had a wonderful visit here.
How about a website, Tiziana?
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And
thank
in conclusion,
so
the
much.
Website that will let people find out about everything you're doing?
Yes, of course.
And what is it?
I will keep you posted on every...
your website.
But your website is...
Our website is www.frescobaldi.it.
Great.
So, frescobaldi.it, and please come to visit us. There's a section, of course, English section.
There was one last thing we wanted to talk about.
Please call first.
Which is, if you think you might be interested in visiting the Castello here.
The Castello di Nipozzano?
It's not something you can just sort of sign up to do. Perhaps you can explain, Tiziana, how people would get in touch and decide if it makes sense for both of you.
Of course, you can write to us by email. You can. We are also on. I think we have a Facebook section, so you can write easily and find us easily, or you can through our website. And we do have a lot of people coming to visit us, but we do. Think that you have to have a little bit of interest in wine.
Exactly. Very well put.
So, we think we want to be a little bit selective. So
targeted.
But we are happy, you know, that a lot of people come to visit us here in Nipozzano. It's just a few kilometers away from Florence. So it's actually an easy drive to come
beautiful.
All the way here. Yeah. But, and so it's nice. You can buy wine. There's you can have a meal if you book, sometime ahead, because we do have a lot of visitors and we are quite happy to have people, but we don't want to have, you know, huge big groups of people. We want to have somebody who is actually interested in wine. So,
makes sense.
Because we do put a lot of effort in trying to make our best in preparing the meal, etc. So I think it's important that the person is in fact a little bit interested in wine and
food. We certainly were and have had a marvelous experience here.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
We feel very fortunate to have shared part of your family experience. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
And thank you.
And now another break, but we'll look forward to seeing you on the other side.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Here we are again. And Peter, are you going to introduce?
I'm
going to
tee this
one
up as well.
You love Banffy.
Castello Banffy is so unusual in Italian winemaking circles. If Frescobaldi is ancient, going back 7 centuries, and obviously Italian-owned, Castello Banffy is the polar opposite. First of all, the project only began in people's minds in the late 1970s, didn't really begin operation until the 1980s, and the owner since the very beginning
had
been an American family, a man who's well established and recognized in wine circles, John Mariani, and his the generation succeeding him. It's a wonderful place to visit, beautiful wines to sample, and here's the general manager of the whole operation, Enrico, talking to us about what it's like to be Castello Banffy.
Enrico Villarchio is the general manager of Banffy, which is an overwhelmingly fabulous state. Where are we located?
We are located in Montalcino, in Tuscany. Montalcino is in the south part of Tuscany, basically 1 hour south of Siena.
Now let's correct something that's a little bit confusing, because the first time we came to this area, we were actually looking for a restaurant. We have since discovered as closed and reopened, and everybody said, oh, it's in Montalcino. When you get to the village of Montalcino, you still have some distance to come.
No, when you are in the village of Montalcino, consider that Montalcino area is one of the biggest areas we have in Tuscany, and the winery, that is a total area of 24,000 hectares.
Distance on SP14, it's number of kilometers, so trust us and just keep going
When you are in Montalcino, you have to proceed in the south direction, Grosseto direction, for another 15 kilometers, and you get to Banffy.
Now, tell us about Banffy. When was the winery actually started?
Banffy started as a project, started in 1978, and Banffy is owned by American family.
And always has been.
Always, because they created Banffy.
Right.
They didn't purchase from an existing winery, but they created this concept in 1978, the Mariani family. And they came to Montalcino, and they started to buy land, and then to develop the winery and all these estate concept. This started in 1988. The winery was then officially opened in 1984. September 12 was the official opening of the winery. And the first vintage that we vinified in our winery, existing winery, was 1982. Well, the vinification department was the first department to run.
Now, the iconic symbol of Castello Banffy, though, which is a magnificent castle, has been here a good deal longer.
A little bit longer, because it is a castle of the 11th century. And it's a castle of the 11th century located in the center of our property, and as is, is the flagship, the symbol of our estates, and also where all our hospitality operation are based on.
Now, there are a number of surprising things about your winery. The first for me is the sheer quantity that you're able to produce while maintaining quality. And the second is that you change continuously, evolving with the times, so that today you are a green winery. Tell us about that. Tell us, first of all, about the green aspect of the business, and secondly, how you were so big but still maintain quality.
This was, since the beginning, a mission that the Mariani had while coming here in Italy, and to their country of origin, if you wanted to say, to develop a winery, and to produce a wine with also the concept, we have to go back to the 70s, what was the winemaking to the 70s, where the wine was vinified with in a certain way that was basically the need to use more histamines and sulfites, because the wine production was not so oriented into a clean, more than a green, into a clean environment. Because wine is one of the most sensible products to any kind of bacteria, contamination. The purpose of the Mariani was, starting from the vineyard to the winery, to really research and develop a production that was able to reduce as much as possible the use of histamine and sulfites in order to have a very pure and natural, a very natural wine. This, of course, has to start into the vineyards in order to manage the vineyards in the proper way that you reduce as much as you can kind of utilization of chemicals. It's important to have also to select the right location where to plant the vineyards, the right varieties that can fit at the best the climate, and they are naturally part of this climate and growing conditions. At the sense in the winery, they also the utilization of certain materials, like the introduction of stainless steel in the winemaking.
Well, that's what you use now?
Yes, we still use a lot of stainless steel because it's a material that is very easy to maintain, to be maintained clean without using any kind of particular substance, but only water. And it protects the wine from any kind of contamination. At the same time, it's very important the winery really to be cleaned every day in order to maintain, like in your house, like when you consider
that's,
your
that's
house.
That's a big issue it's, with wineries.
It's basically it's the winery. The winery is the house of the wine, as well as we like to see our house clean and with no dust or dirty things around, because can create some allergy to us or some bad reaction. The same is happening to the wine. It's nothing magic. There are no secrets in this.
Going green for the winery was another step altogether.
Was it more than going green? In terms, we were pioneering in the sense of being certified. We were the first winery in the world to get at the same time the three certifications. So the three ISO, the two ISO certification for the production and the viticultural activity, and also the SA8000, which is an ethical certification that is a comprehensive of how you manage your environment, considering the environment as a very wide concept, from human resources to the land to natural resources, means that it's an international certification that recognizes companies that are that have particular attention to all the resources and the environment, and also to the ethical standards used for what concerned their employees.
Now, you began, Banvi began as a Brunello property, I think, right? A flagship wine of this region, one of the world's great red wines. You've gone way beyond that with a range of wines that we saw in the Enoteca. Are they all made here?
Yes. We started in this, coming also to the other point, quantity and quality. Quantity and quality are not a concept in contradiction. It depends by the estate and the production system. First of all, Banfi, as we have quite a large estate because we cover more than almost 3,000 hectares, 2,800 hectares of property. But not 100% is cultivated to vineyards, because the first important things that was done was to select within the property the soils that were suitable for vineyards, and we did a Navy study in terms of soil classification. And this helped also us to introduce other varieties and also to create the estates as, not to be considered this estate as a unique estate, but as a constellation of vineyards and a constellation of small estates. Each one has its own characteristics, and these assembled together, they can create the uniqueness of the characteristic that we see in the grapes that we use for our products, for our wines, from the Brunello to the Centine, to the Col di Sasso, or to the Poggioloro Riserva, the Supertasto.
Now, there were two wines that I saw in the Enoteca, and one of them we actually were part of the U.S. launching. That's a red wine called Belnero.
Yes.
Which was a new departure for Banfi just a very short time ago. So you're not standing still by any means. And so what was Belnero about? Why did you decide to introduce that?
So we never stand there. Any seconds we look to our future. And this is a kind of attitude that we had since the beginning in order to constantly research what could be, research our climate, our soil, our varieties, and find out, discovering something new. This is part of our, I can say, part of the genetic pattern of Banffy. And Bennero is coming out. We spent more than 20 years in deeply studying Sangiovese, doing also clonal selection of Sangiovese, comparing combination with our soil classification. So we have did a long experience in Sangiovese for Brunello di Montalcino, and this, of course, a never-ending project. Starting from this, it's also Bennero is, we can say, a son of this study, in the sense that we decided to, while Brunello is 100% Sangiovese-based, as well as Rosso di Montalcino, this is by law, has to be 100%. Bennero is an experiment of, was part results of an experiment in order to see how Sangiovese can react if blended with a small portion of other estate varieties. And it's Bennero is a very estate, is an estate wine in the real sense. Is let me use a French terminology, a terroir wine, because it's a combination of varietal aspect of Sangiovese that is basically 80% of the blend of Bennero, from 75 to 80% of the blend, and combined vintage by vintage with other estate varieties like mainly Cabernet Merlot, that according to the characteristic of the vintage may have a different percentage into the blend.
Now I noticed also that you're making a sparkling wine, and that wasn't a traditional thing either. That must be fairly new.
No, sparkling wine are coming from sparkling wine. We have also our sister winery in Piedmont, located in the south of Piedmont near the city of Aquiterbe.
So the sparkling wines are coming from that
sparkling wine,
typical sparkling wine region.
Yes, Tuscany is not a sparkling wine region, also because the climate that we have in Tuscany basically is not allowed to have a proper maturation.
But isn't your climate changing like everybody else in the world?
It's very difficult to evaluate any real climate changes in a human lifetime, because this is a second in the climate evolution. We are experiencing in these years some more than a very an average temperature increase. More than this, we have more variability, more excursion in our climate events, in the sense that we have perhaps more sometimes some kind of, I would say, equatorial rainfall, very concentrated, or a different kind of spread all along the year of rainfall and snow and whatever. To see that these are very sustainable, that are very now changes that will remain into the time, is still, it's very, very difficult. Because once stated this, I remember in 2003, where it was one of the hottest summer in Europe, the year after was one of the coldest summer in Europe. So it's there is a perceived higher variability in the climate events and climate elements. How much of this is part of a structural and long-term climate change? How much of this is related to short-term condition? This, I think, it's very, very difficult to state.
Now, these are such heady topics. These are such heavy science that we're dealing with here. We need to move on to the fact that Castello Banfi is a destination, not just for people who imbibe wine and that's all they do because they're tour enthusiasts. It's a place for really luxury visiting and enjoying this beautiful part of Toscana. So here in the Castello, you have accommodations, luxury accommodations. You have two restaurants, I believe. and a large enoteca for tasting wines, in addition to the winery itself.
Castello Banfi, the concept of Castello Banfi since the beginning was to develop not only a winery, not only a production estate, but a destination for people who loves people who love wines and who love the culture that there is behind the wine. Wine is a production of our culture, is a production of our territory. And the uniqueness of the wine is stating mainly in the country of origin, in the land that is originating this wine. The idea was since the beginning to develop all together with the wine production and the estates to develop also infrastructure for giving to our wine lovers that are traveling from all around the world, where they came here to offer them the best environment, not only to taste the wine, but to have a live experience with the wine and the territory. So we develop the Enoteca, we develop our restaurants services. Yes, we have basically a wine bar and the restaurants, plus a banqueting room that they use for big functions. And since 2007, we have also opened our boutique hotel that is adjacent to the castle in the old village called Il Borgo, that is now the name of the hotel, that was used by the people that were used to live there and working from the castle owner. We have a museum and a balsameria in order to offer to the people who are coming here a very Castello Banfi experience, a very territory experience and cultural experience.
Well, we thank you, Enrico, for taking so much time to talk to us. I'm sure you must have a thousand and one things to do around your winery, and we have at least several things to do around your winery and Enoteca and restaurant too. So how do we say goodbye? We say arrivederci Castello Banfi.
Arrivederci.
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 Tutti siete benvenuti a Castello Banfi.
Grazie mille.
If you can't understand that, you don't belong here.
Well, didn't we have a good time? I guess it's now time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And now we are going to preface our next interview. I just wanted to say the guest name, though, because it's like music or poetry. Donatella Cinelli Colombini.
And the interview speaks for itself.
I am totally thrilled to be with somebody who shares my interest in equal opportunity and recognition of the great talents of women. So we are now talking to Donatella Cinelli Colombini at her actual, how do you call where we are?
Fattoria del Colle, a Trequanda, Siena.
Okay.
We are in the south of Chianti.
And you have a winery?
Yes, this is an estate, a fattoria. It means that we produce grape, olives, and cereals, grain. And we have some farmhouses in which it is possible to receive guests. We have a little restaurant and two swimming pools, a tennis court, and a cooking class to learn the Italian kitchen.
Yeah, and you have cooking classes. Donatella, you are unique in employing all women.
In my winery, there are only women. The seller, the person who sell wine, who receive the guests, the cellar master, the enologist, and the person who work in the winery. Everybody, all the staff is female. And we are the first winery in Italy with a female staff. And the reason of...
Yeah, tell us the reason, because I didn't know why until I read why.
Because in Italy there is a big discrimination, and there are a lot of women in the wine world, But for them, it's quite impossible to go up our decisions.
Yeah, the power yeah. position.
It's
you're
very,
right.
It's very, very difficult to for a woman to become the chef, to have real opportunity. And I try to demonstrate that women can manage a winery. Of course, sometimes it's not so easy for us because we need and help when some engine.
Oh, please stop. But no, I mean, you actually set off trying to build this winery. Let's go back a little bit. You have inherited this property from your mother, who inherited it from her mother, and you are going to pass it down to your daughter. Yeah. Is that unusual?
No, it's not unusual, but of course the main part of the property, of my mother's property, but the main part, the most important part of the property of my mother are managed by my brother.
Oh.
It means that in Italy, usually in the wine families, the brother, the son, has more opportunity of the daughter.
But how come your property is different?
When my mother decided to stop to retire, the main activity of the family to my brother. And they give me a part of the property to be converted. And so I made a winery, some vineyard, a new commercial network. And also in my father's property, the Fattoria del Colle in which we stay now, there was some apartment for holidays, but they was very, very simple. There was no winery, no restaurant. It was very, very simple.
But you took off with all this, which shows how much talent and ability women have. And then when you went to find a winemaker, they said to you, well, we don't have anybody except a lot of women, because nobody wants the women.
But we have also a chef that is a man. We have some person on that drive the tractors that are men.
A man, they drive the tractors.
You also have wonderful Carlo, who is right here. We won't give his sex away, but we'll let you guess.
Yeah, Carlo. Carlo is fine.
It is interesting. It's worthwhile telling a quick story for Donatelle's benefit, because you remember we met Eileen Crane, who was the president. Her name is Eileen Crane, and she was the founding president of a sparkling winery in California called Domaine Carneros. Uh-huh. And it's really funny. She said, here's how she got her first job in winemaking. She was at the University of California at Davis, which is a very famous wine school.
Yes.
And someone who had a winery was looking for a new apprentice winemaker. And he called California at Davis and said, do you have anybody you can send? And he said, well, the only students who don't have jobs are women. You wouldn't want any of those, would you? and the owner said, I guess that's okay. So that's how she got started.
The situation in Italy is worst.
It's worse, okay.
But, you know, in Spain, what section was it? We went to a big wine convention in New York or
Navarre,
Chicago.
The
section of Navarra. Over 50% of the winemakers are women, because they're so much better.
But we have a French winemaker.
Yes, I read that.
And she's, I think, one of the best in Europe.
But she also works with a couple of guys. Yeah, no, it's what we're saying is that first of all, we haven't really covered the scope of this. in addition to setting up this fabulous winery, you have these other programs all dedicated to creativity and the arts. You have an award you give every year. Is that true?
Yes.
It's called the Prima Donna Award.
It's to give a sign, to give an example. And this year, we choose I don't know the English name, Astronauta.
Astronaut?
Yeah. It is the only European astronaut. And FEMA. Last year it was a researcher, a lady who discovered the virus.
A virus, that's right, yeah. I read that.
And it was the first person who decided to give the La Scoperta, the discovery by internet to everybody.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
And the year before, it was a port lady that won the silver medal in the Beijing Olympic Game at 42 years old. That is not normal. Because
it's not normal. I could not do that.
Because usually the sport winner are very, very young. And this lady has two children, and she was able to demonstrate that it is possible to win after 40 years old.
And she's American, right?
She is Italian.
Oh, she's Italian. Because there was an American woman swimmer who also did very well in the Beijing Olympics, and nobody said she would have a chance. But let's turn this conversation back to the core of this whole visit, which is because it is a little bit about wine.
Tell us about your wine.
And just
the
listeners,
issue.
Just in case you're wondering, this might sound like a vanity project, but Cinelli Colombini makes a truly wonderful Brunello.
Thank you.
A star among Brunellos. Don't you
Thank
think
you.
So?
I think that we produce a wonderful Brunello, and this is my dream. It is to produce wine is the best job in the world. And I am very, very lucky because I am wine producer. And
a quality wine producer. Let's make that very clear, not just any wine producer. Really, a star wine producer.
But it is a great sensation to work with the grape, with the vines. It's a wonderful job because each year you play a new game and you are in front of the nature, of the weather, and to try to obtain the best. Each year is different, and this is very amusing.
You sound like you were very happy working with the vines.
Yes. The production of Brunello, for me, it is a great opportunity because the soil, the weather, the people who work in that area are the best. And, of course, it is difficult to compete with the other winery because we are 250 people, wine producer, on one hill. But it is very amusing. It is.
How much do you produce?
How many bottles of Brunello? 55,000 bottles.
That's boutique size.
Yes. A little quantity.
And why did you decide to work with wine, with the Brunello?
I born in a wine family.
So that's it. Mm.
And it is very amusing because, of course, it's very nice also to work about other products, as apple, vegetable, but the grape is another fruit.
It's a love. It's a passion.
It's able to arrive a very high quality level, and it's something like the fashion, like the movie, like the art. You give an interpretation of the style of life of our century, of our age.
It's a very creative opportunity, outlet for you.
I loved,
I think it was Benjamin Franklin, who reputedly said, wine is a constant reminder that God loves us. Do you think that says it fairly well?
Wonderful, wonderful.
I think Thomas Jefferson said something pretty smart as well. But I'll bet that Dante Alighieri and Machiavelli also had something to say. And perhaps you have a philosophical,
philosophical
thought.
Dante said that the come si dice, il calore del sol, that the sun eating that become wine.
The sun eating becomes wine.
The sun powerful that become.
The sun becomes wine.
No, the warmth of the sun. The warmth of the sun.
The warmth of the sun becomes wine. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, with that we'll finish, and I thank you so much, Donatello. And grazie
I'm sorry
mille.
For my English.
Your English is better than my Italian.
And
grazie, anche Carlo.
On the air, we should take the opportunity to say hello to your good friend, Cinzia Fanciulli, who said we should say
hello and drink wine. It is the best experience that you can do each day.
So there you are, listeners. We hope you enjoyed this program as much as we enjoyed recording it and providing it to you, and that you'll take advantage of following up on these wonderful establishments that we've introduced you to. And in the meantime, between now and next week, when we'll hope to see you again.
Bye-bye.